back to the Bonfire Podcast, where we talk about the UFC and mixed martial arts with those closest to the fight game. I am your host, longtime MMA reporter and MMA junkie senior reporter, Mike Bon. Just want to start off by thanking everyone who watched, commented, shared the tribute episode to our late producer, Abby Subban, who, if you missed it, tragically passed away on December 29th. And we've just been dealing with all the fallout of that. And it's been a hard time for everyone. But the amazing feedback that everyone has given, the very generous donations that have been made to the GoFundMe to help his fiance Charlotte and his four children through this tough time has meant the world to everyone kind of in his inner circle here as they try to navigate the future. Once again, anyone who donated the littlest bit means the world. The people who, you know, donated a lot, the likes of Dana White, the UFC, Ariel Helwani, and a few others, just cannot thank everyone enough. And it's truly been touching to see all the support, and meant a lot to us because we have a lot of worry for his family in this time and going forward. So that just helps alleviate things even the littlest bit. And I know I talked about on the show last week a fair bit, didn't know what the future of this program is going to be. I'm going to try to keep pushing forward as best I can. Appreciate everyone who has reached out to me personally about trying to help in various ways. I've had some communication with a few people as we try to figure out the future, but kind of my thought is, you know, Abby and I started this thing together and, you know, had some agreements made on what we were going to do and some ideas in mind for going forward. And I want to try to stick true to those and make the show as big as possible because I want to stay loyal to our agreements. And that means, you know, the bigger the show gets, the more support we have, the more I can help his family, you know, indefinitely for the rest of my days. So that means a lot. And yeah, your show of support for this program is a way of supporting, you know, Abby into the long future and his family. So I guess that's kind of where I've landed on things. We'll see how it all goes in terms of scheduling and getting out episodes, but do you have a great show I pulled together for you guys today with one of our favorites here on the program, UFC commentator, analyst, Laura Sanko. Join me and we are going to go over who we think are going to define the UFC in 2026. We each came up with five fighters that we believe are going to be the ones that kind of carry the way through these next 12 months from a big fight standpoint, an in-cage performance standpoint, running the headlines and the media, getting themselves out there in various different ways. I feel like those are a great bit of conversations to have to kind of set up and lay the table for 2026. So I had a lot of fun with Laura doing that. Appreciate everyone who goes through the episode. Please like, rate, subscribe, follow, comment, share, all these different things. Means a lot, and more than ever, the support for the show. So I will be back on the other side of the break with Laura Sanko as we give our five fighters that will define the UFC in 2026. Back here on the Bonfire with one of our favorites is Miss Laura Sanko. Laura, how are you doing?
I'm good. I'm warming my hands. It's been chilly here, so I love a good bonfire, Mike. I love a good bonfire. I thought about bringing props, but that was just too much work.
We'll get that for next time. Is it? how's the break been? Do you guys get pretty bad weather down there? Or is it not being too bad?
It's kind of all over the place, to be honest with you. We had really early snow, which is weird for Kansas City, pretty significantly. We had like 8 inches, and then 3 days ago, it was 70 degrees. So that's Missouri weather. It's all over the place. So
yeah. And we talked a little bit off camera, but it sounds like this has been kind of a relaxing and refreshing hiatus in the schedule for you.
I needed it, to be honest with you. I really, really, I think a lot of us did. A lot of us who work in the industry, and just that train just keeps going, right? And it's, you know, life gets busy and other things, and it's hard sometimes to just feel like you can never catch your breath. So I needed it. I feel like I'm coming out of some sort of weird hibernation and you know, getting my sea legs under me. But we got a couple of very interesting weeks ahead of us for sure.
Yeah, no doubt. I'm wondering if we are still going to get this break moving forward, right? Because pre-ESPN, we had a pay-per-view end of December every year. Like, it was kind of part of the tradition of the UFC schedule. I wonder if that's going to be something discussed to be returned to, or if the executives at the UFC have warmed up to this and like think it's a good thing.
That's my sense. I'm not stating facts here, but no. I want to say, I remember people discussing this and that it had kind of been decided internally that, you know, people do need a break at some point. Probably won't be 6 weeks, I'm guessing, in the future. But yeah, I don't know that the New Year's fights are going to be a thing that comes back. But who knows?
Yeah, I wonder. Well, we'll see if we get, you know, a Memorial Day and July 4th. These have all been like, you know, historic weekends for the UFC. But again, it's nice to give the people their actual holiday time off. But it's going to be interesting to see how this all rolls out. But yeah, we're a few weeks away here from UFC 324. How are things on your end? I see like a lot of the on-air talent kind of sharing like they've signed new contracts, new things are happening. What's your status like? Were you already in a good place or did something?
Yeah, my status is good. The details are still being ironed out, a little bit of, you know, back and forth. But no, I have dates, you know, through the summer. So I feel confident that we'll get something worked out. But yeah, nothing officially, you know, pen to paper that I can like announce at the moment, but it'll happen. I'm not too worried about it, and excited because I've already got, you know, some partners reaching out, Paramount Plus and CBS, to maybe possibly do some work over there. We'll see. There's a lot of really exciting, fresh things that are coming across my plate. It'll be fun.
Awesome. Do you have a first fight card that you're going to be calling yet?
Yeah. Off the top of my head, it's the I should have my schedule in front of me, Mike. It's not either of the two pay-per-views, obviously. It's the first Paramount Plus, though, at the Apex.
Yes,
and then I'm calling.
And gosh, who's he fighting? Vinicius Oliveira,
I believe. This is why I can't, I could never do what you do. I literally have to take these things week by week. You can't ask me anything about the future and I'll be like, I don't know. That one, and then I think Mexico City, I'm calling that one too. So yeah.
Nice. Keeping you busy. That's awesome. Yeah. I'm curious. I was going to ask you this at the end, but I want to ask you now because it's kind of a commentary related and I didn't prepare you this. So if nothing comes to mind off the top, but like you call these fights, you study all this tape, you look at this, like, is there a trend that you're looking forward to or looking towards in 2026, like 2025? A lot of people called it the year of the spinning back elbow. We saw a lot of great knockouts there. Like, is there something that you kind of see that's maybe bubbling up to the surface that we could maybe see kind of pan out more in 2026 in these fights?
I think the trend is going to continue to be violence. And I know that that's a very general thing to say, but I think that there is so much talk now around rewarding violent fighters and rewarding finishes and the striving for finishes. How much of that actually makes its way to any sort of actual, you know, system whereby people are compelled to do that, rules, scoring, payment, right? How much of that will actually be formalized or changed? I don't know if at all, but I think that there is this feeling in the atmosphere that with this new broadcast partner, we need to show these people what fighting really is. Like we are going to have a new audience without this paywall. And what electrified people about this sport in the beginning was the storylines juxtaposed with what these people actually go out there and do. So I think that the people who will emerge as the real stars are going to continue to be the people that deliver on those incredible finishes and incredible battles.
Yeah, that's right on point. And I think we're kind of seeing it with the way some matchmaking is happening, some fighters that are, you know, being let go from the roster, like entertainment and finishes are being prioritized. But I can imagine for the athletes, it's even harder, right? Because everyone is getting so damn good now. Like you can be amazing, you can be the most violent guy, but it's hard to finish someone who's extremely talented in 15 minutes.
It is. And if your skill set, you know, tends toward being a very dominant wrestler, grappler, you're going to have to find ways to be, and we have guys like that. Islam Makhachev is not a boring fighter, you know, and yet that is the meta of his game. So I think the guys who tend in that, and ladies who tend in that direction, just have to find other ways to be interesting and exciting. And part of that is what you are outside of the octagon, right? This is the sports entertainment business. And the more that everyone can accept that, embrace that, be who they are, you don't have to invent a persona necessarily, but just be a bigger, more out there version of yourself. Those are the people that are going to continue to find success. But, you know, you talk to Dean Thomas, he's very passionate about the return of ground and pound. So maybe that's a trend that we can look forward to, because if you're on top, if you're in a dominant position, you should be looking to finish the fight.
Yeah, especially if you're that good and you're dominating a fight, you should be able to kind of take that next step. And it'll be interesting to see how this all shakes out, because it is a fine line, right, between pushing the exciting fighters, but then also being able to say, we are the UFC, this is where the best fight the best, and we have all the best fighters in the world.
Yeah, and I'm also talking out of both sides of my mouth right now.
Yeah, I think we all are when it comes to this topic.
I'm the same person who will defend the idea that grappling is not scored enough already. Mm. And here I am talking about, like, you know, they should change it more. I'm not saying that they should, but they could. I think there are a lot of times where I'll watch a fight and I'll see 6 or 7 submission attempts. And, you know, I go back and look at the stats later and they'll show one. And I'm like, really? Yeah. You know, and I don't know how well-versed sometimes the judges are. They're very good judges, but some of the more niche submission attempts can be really difficult to know what you're looking at all the time, unless you've physically done it and been in it and been subbed by it, to be honest with you. So I don't know. I'm a very much a fence rider when it comes to this stuff, because I do understand, like, how difficult it is to take someone down and control them. That is its own art. But at the end of the day, we are in the sports entertainment industry.
Exactly. Like, we were just talking about this last week or so when we were deciding, like, our robbery of the year for MMA Junkie, and they ultimately went with Alexander Volkov versus Jailton Almeida, which, like, that kind of emphasizes everything we're talking about, a fight like that, right? Where it's like control, time spent, but no damage.
I called that dumpster fire. It was a...
Yeah, it was a weird one.
It was a weird one.
Yeah, but I think this perfectly kind of dovetails into the topic we had today, right? Like, who are the fighters that are going to define the UFC in 2026? And it all comes down to that. That's what you said there. It's not only what you do in the cage. It's potentially what you do outside the cage, how you control headlines, things like that. And when I presented this to you, I didn't really give you a specific criteria. So, like, yeah. I'm curious to see which elements of these you weighed. So I guess before we get into it, like, did you have challenge in this exercise?
Yeah.
Like you could go to the pound for pound rankings and just pick the top five if you wanted to, but, like, you know, how did you kind of weigh things in your mind?
I created my own algorithm, Mike. Mm-hmm. I put pen to paper, assigned weight to various categories. I'm just kidding. I mean, I kind of did, but not actually.
Mentally.
Mentally. To me, it's gotta be that perfect mix of, can you create headlines and remain in the headlines? And whether it's through your own doing or not, sometimes uncertainty breeds discussion. So it might not necessarily even be your fighting style. But all this weight class movement you're going to find in my rankings is a big piece of, I think, what keeps things interesting, what keeps people talking. So I think at the end of the day, that's what it came down to is, who are we going to be talking about the most? And it's obviously going to be their potential for wins and huge fights, but it's also some of the factors that are surrounding them that force us to talk about them on an ongoing basis.
Agreed. I love that. So you mentioned the word rankings there. Did you rank them or did you just come up with five names?
I ranked-ish them. I mean, okay. I feel like all five of them could probably, you know, be ranked differently. This isn't like set in stone where I think five is so different than one, but I kind of ranked them. I tried. Yeah,
I did a little bit too. Okay. Well, let's get right into it. We'll have you open up first, of course, since you're the guest. Give me, who is your fifth choice?
All right. Coming in at number five, we have Alex Pereira. He's always going to be in the headlines. He's already been in the headlines multiple times in the first week of the year, having this budding relationship with the darling of MMA, Tracy Cortez. Was it today or yesterday?
Yeah, that they called it off.
It broke up. And I immediately was like, was that a giant PR stunt? Was that just them being funny and like, hey, let's just all get everybody excited? And then I don't think it was. I have no idea. But we're talking about it. And everything on my feed is Tracy Cortez, Alex Pereira. So again, nothing to do with his fighting, but there he is. We're all talking about it. The aura, you know, he got all his aura back and then some when he knocked out Ankalaev. And I just think that the uncertainty about where he's going to end up creates that conversation. Is he going to heavyweight? Is he going to stay at light heavyweight and try to knock some of those guys out? There's some interesting challengers there. So I don't know that he necessarily lost much aura with the loss to Ankalaev, but I think had that second fight not gone the way it did, we would have started to see a decline. Yeah. He's back, and I think he's going to make the absolute most of whatever time he has left in this sport. And I don't think it's a long time, so I do think it's going to be a very good time.
Yeah, I love that choice. He's on there. I had him slightly higher. I'll get to him as we go through. But yeah, I mean, he's been, I feel like, could be in this category. And if you did it in hindsight, for like 3 years now, 4 years now, he's been part of these big fights, headlined huge pay-per-views. So yeah, he's a great choice. And this feels like a very significant year for his career, right? Because of all the things you said there, are we finally going to get the heavyweight move? And what are the circumstances going to be that comes under? Like, will it be a fight with John Jones with no belt on the line? What's Tom Aspinall's future with this eye injury? How long is he going to be out? Does that create an interim title or a vacant title scenario where he looks into that? Like, I know there's some untrustworthy or unverified reports out there being like him versus Cyril gone for an interim title. Like, all these things feel like they're in play and very realistic for him, at least.
The vacuum of this break has created like this wild rumor mill.
It's painful. So, well, the aggregators out there need to do something to get their X money or whatever. Yeah. But it's painful. I mean, I literally just saw like Ben Askren, someone had posted a thing being like, look how healthy Ben Askren looks, like blah blah blah. And he's like, this photo is from before everything happened, and it's got like 6 million views on Twitter.
I almost died.
Yeah, it's agonizing. So yeah, Pereira, great choice. What does your gut say? I know when they were looking for main events for the first Paramount card, like him versus Ahlberg was discussed briefly. They landed on something else, but seems like there was at least a thought of having him defend that title. Is it going to depend a lot on Tom Aspinall when that opens things up? How are you seeing this play out?
I think it depends a lot on Tom Aspinall. What will likely happen, I don't know why. I think the most likely outcome is that he will face Carlos Ahlberg. But what do I want to see? I want to see him go up to heavyweight. You know, we had this conversation a few months ago. I love seeing people strive for incredible, crazy feats. And so I hope whether it happens first, second, or third, or at any point, I feel like before we no longer have him in the sport, I want to see Alex Pereira get a shot at the heavyweight championship.
Yeah. So if you're kind of his team or like, you know, fantasizing this in the perfect way, is it, you know, go for the belt straight away against Tom? Because John Jones is a hell of a risky fight, right? Like there's all the upside and the glory that comes with that, but there's no belt with it, right? And if you're trying to do the three division champ thing, that's not going to bring you that.
But what if it's an interim belt, Mike? What if they just go absolutely off the wall and they're like, well, Tom's out, he's not healthy. John versus can you imagine? I mean, I feel like anything is within the realm of possibility. That's an incredibly hot take. I don't think it's very likely, but who the hell knows?
Yeah, I mean, I think it ultimately depends what, you know, maybe some people inside the White House are pushing for on that card, what they really ask for. I mean, everything's being cleared. Did you see this report that just came out about moving the G7 summit for the White House? Like,
I hope people can appreciate, like, that's insane.
It is.
That's insane. The UFC, the company I work for, you work with, is literally the linchpin and is affecting world political meetings. And I'm here for it. I'm sorry. I love it. I love
incredible. It. Yeah, we will. We'll see if John Jones lands on the card. Did you have John in your top five?
I don't. No, I really wanted to. I really wanted to. I have some honorable mentions. I'm gonna cheat at the end and have a few honorable mentions.
No, I had my five, and then I had one category that's like on the bubble that has one name that we'll get to, then like notable omissions, and we can kind of go through those and then. But John Jones wasn't there just because it's so unpredictable, right?
That's it. He's either gonna dominate a large chunk of the year in headlines, or he's not gonna fight. And I wasn't willing to go out on that limb quite yet. I want to. I desperately want to see John fight. I'm a John Jones fan. I'm just not ready. And I feel like Dana meant it when he said that he can't put John on the White House card because of, you know, how proven unreliability in the past. So I don't know.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. John is one of the ones that's interesting here. Like, in the same ilk as Conor McGregor, is you could put them in the top five and they could not have a single fight because those two guys could just tweet out something every single day and they would get a story and their graphics and like whatever. Yeah. So they can play that game. They know what they're doing. So, okay, that's interesting. Well, this one also for my first choice here at number five, that kind of revolves around someone who could land on the White House, someone who's on the first card of the year. I think this is going to be a big year of Kayla Harrison. On the women's side, I think obviously her versus Amanda is one of the greatest female fights ever, arguably the greatest matchup ever. I could see a rematch happening either way, no matter who wins, maybe at the White House there. But for Kayla, I mean, if she wins this fight, I assume she would be at the White House, the only American champion currently, the two-time Olympian, like she would be prominently placed there. So this could be a huge year for Kayla. And yeah, she's not the most active in the media and things like that in terms of like tweeting stuff. She's a great interview, but I think fight-wise and just her being that American champion with this White House thing looming feels like it could be a big year, but she's got to beat Nunes. So that kind of hinges on it too.
Yeah, she's my top honorable mention for all of the reasons that you just listed. And, you know, again, if you want to talk about absolute pipe dreams, you know, imagine either her or Amanda winning, and then we get the Ronda comeback, which I realize has been shut down many times. But there's also, okay, it's been shut down, but I feel like every time it's shut down, there's also like a crack left open, whether it's Ronda talking about it, whether it's Dana talking about it, other people surrounding them. It's always like, oh yeah, that's not happening now, or that would never happen most likely. Mm-hmm. You know, I feel like there's always this little crack left open. So the fan in me wants to believe that there's this tiny little possibility that they'll surprise us with a Ronda versus Amanda or Ronda versus Kayla. That's the one I want to see, if I'm being honest. Ronda versus Kayla, the backstory, all that.
Any interest in Ronda against Gina Carano? I feel like that might actually be the most real one.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. That I love a throwback fight. That to me, you know, and people who are new to the sport will probably not be familiar with Gina Carano, but she was Ronda before Ronda was Ronda. She was the first woman, you know, along with Chris Cyborg, to headline a major fight on television. But it was her presence that made it so wildly popular. And she's a pioneer, and I talk with her every once in a while on Instagram. So yeah, I would, that'd be insane. That'd be so cool.
And I know she's out there in Vegas working hard with John Wood at Syndicate. Yeah. So we'll see what this all leads to. My biggest question, I feel like it's happening. It's just, is it going to be a UFC thing, or is it going to be something that they do on their own? So curious on that. And then I guess the last thing on the Kayla front, you know, she's also mentioned Valentina Shevchenko as an opponent for the White House. So if she could beat Kayla Harrison and Amanda Nunes and Valentina Shevchenko in 1 year, like, That's
a great point. I didn't even think about that, John. Mike, that's crazy. I didn't even think about that. That would be okay. Okay.
Yeah, that's big.
You're making me rethink my list.
No, these are good. As I said, it was fine if we have crossover, but the diversity makes it key here as well. So who did you have at number four?
Number four, I have Michael Morales. Ooh. Michael Morales was undefeated, was not undefeated, back to being undefeated, and absolutely serving in a little black dress, Michael Morales. Yep. For all the reasons, fight related, I mean, incredible win streak that he's on. Like I said, still undefeated. We got that fixed. It was funny when all the New Year's Eve stuff came up. I think it's called La Vuitas.
Yes.
Where they celebrate on New Year's Eve, you know, as it's an Ecuadorian cultural thing. The men dress in drag, and like there's this whole thing, parade thing that they do. But the whole time I was thinking, like, what are Islam's fans thinking of that? If they don't read English or Spanish, they're like, what on earth? But I mean, if you're Michael Morales, like, who cares? Who cares what people think? It's your culture, it's your tradition. I thought he looked great.
100%. He looks great in the cage too.
And more importantly, he looks great in the cage too. What's crazy about him is, as the challenges get steeper, I feel like he's only looking better, which is generally not the case. Generally, as the challenge gets steeper, then, you know, your fights go longer, maybe you have some decisions. He has continued to look absolutely sensational, and to do what he did to Sean Brady, I certainly didn't expect it to look like that, to be honest with you. And so, yeah, I think he's going to have a very, very big year. And that whole division, there's so many opportunities for him. But I think he all but sort of confirmed that, like, Islam is the fight that they're targeting.
Yeah, they're looking at that. They did talk about that for the Paramount headliner as well. I think Khabib shut down Islam making a quick turnaround off New York. So that wasn't really in play. But yeah, I think I saw Morales say that was in play, or a Jack Della Maddalena fight could be next for him. But either way, like, if he beats Jack, I mean, got to be a title fight after that. So
yeah,
it feels like we could see a title fight for him this year. But welterweight is very interesting, and Islam is on my list somewhere. Spoiler, we'll get to that. But I don't know, do you feel like Morales is the guy? Should he be the guy? There's obviously this Kamaru Usman element as well at welterweight.
I think that Michael Morales is the guy, personally. Yeah. I think so much of creating stars in MMA is about seizing momentum and having really immaculate timing and matchmaking with that timing. And I think that it would be a shame to either wait too long or create an opportunity where you can't seize on this momentum. So I think so. I love Kamaru. I think that's a much tougher fight than a lot of people say. I will say that. I think Kamaru is could give Islam some really a real challenge. So I definitely, if that fight gets made, I'll be happy about it. I'll watch it. But for me, I think Michael Morales.
Yeah. And, for him, I mean, I saw the media turnout for him in New York, like, you know, all the Ecuadorian media, the Spanish language media. Like, if you put him in a title fight in Miami or something like that, I couldn't imagine what it's going to feel like. Like, he got superstar vibes in that sense. So I'd be curious to see. They have options at welterweight. That's for damn sure. So I like that choice a lot. Number four for me, I had Paddy the Batty Pimblett. I think he could be all over things this year. It obviously depends. He needs to beat Justin Gaethje to kind of fulfill all this stuff. But title unifier is there. All sorts of big fights are there. He's beefing with Dan Hooker, with Armin Sarukian, with everyone in this weight class. So, yeah, Paddy Pimblett, the arrival, I guess, has finally happened. We've kind of been waiting for him to maybe emerge as a star. If he can beat Justin Gaethje, which he is, I believe, currently around a 2-1 favorite to do so. Yeah, a little surprising there. I know he opened as the favorite, and people are like, I had Eddie Alvarez on the show, and he's like, he loves Justin Gaethje, obviously. And he's like, once I go to the sports book, Justin's not going to be the, the underdog anymore. My bet's going to change it alone, but clearly not. A lot of backing for Paddy in this fight.
That's fascinating. I mean, it's not like I think Paddy should be some ginormous underdog, but that number being so far the other way does surprise me. That's pretty crazy.
Yeah, it does. But then I look at the stuff on Justin's side. I don't know if you saw that thing about the, you know, ingrown hair, the staph infection. That's one thing. Trevor Whitman just did an interview with Brett Okamoto at ESPN, basically saying, like, this is it for us. If we don't win this, we're not sticking around for money fights or super fights, like, kind of applying that pressure there. So I kind of worry for where Justin Gaethje's mind is at, because he was going to hold out and retire if he didn't get a fight like this either, it seemed like.
Yeah. I just think Justin is so experienced, so violent, so he brings an element that none of Paddy's past opponents has had. Yeah. That being said, there are times where, you know, I think there'd be a lot of opportunities for Paddy to get a submission. So that's what makes it a compelling fight, is that it is a real fight. And for the people who don't see it as a truly competitive fight, then they need to do a little bit more homework.
Yeah, I know Paddy's out there saying he's going to knock him out, but gosh, like, you look at some of Justin's past fights, as you alluded to there, if Paddy doesn't try to get takedowns or top position at least one time in this fight, I feel like that's, you know, doing himself a disservice.
Yes.
He does feel like he's got that advantage.
Yes.
Okay. Number three, I'll just go with this because it is Alex Pereira I had on my list. We went over him a little bit, so that kind of writes the book on that. So who did you have at number three?
Number three, I have Ilia Topuria. Even if we have a period of not having Ilia Topuria fighting in the octagon, the absence is only going to make our hearts grow fonder. I don't imagine, I could be wrong, I don't imagine this stuff that he's dealing with personally is going to drag. I've heard some people, I think it was even Paddy, that said something about he thought this could drag out, you know, a year or more. I just don't see that being the case. I think he'll get a handle on it, whatever, you know, whatever needs to be figured out. I think he'll get a handle on it, at least to where he can get his mind in the place where he can train and do the things that he needs to do. He seemed in good, you know, in a good mood leaving court the other day, which seemed like, you know, a good sign. So listen, he's always going to be, he's the guy who can, you can envision in so many different weight classes. You can insert him into, you know, 155. You can think about him, gosh, could he go up to 170? He's talked about that so many times. So he's such an interesting X factor in a number of divisions that he's always going to be in the conversation. And the man is he ranked number one right now, or is that Islam?
Islam is number one in the pound for pound.
They're gonna go back and forth, I think. Yeah. Whoever
fights, he's fighting next.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I think that's a great choice. I had him a little higher on my list, but he's got to be there. Like, he was a lock for the top five, obviously. And yeah, it's just when are we going to get him back? How many fights can we get in? It was only one last year, which was a bit disappointing. But I know they wanted, like, the plan was to have him versus Patty at UFC 324. Then all this came around. So they're working on that. And yeah, he's in the cage. He's unbelievable. And he knows how to control the headlines too, right? Like, he puts out these statements on his situations that are, like, very professionally done on nice paper with the branding and stuff. So, like, he knows what he's doing.
Presidential.
Yeah. He knows how to, you know, drop a quote in an interview, so he can stick around as much as he wants to be. And this guy is doing press conferences, like, every week around his own promotion. Out there in Spain. So he's very out there. Just, when can we get him in the cage?
What do you think of him? Because didn't he say, like, he's only going to fight, you know, a few more times or one more year? I can't remember exactly what it was, but he indicated, like, I'm not here for, you know, another 5 years.
Yeah, I never know what to make of these guys. I mean, you know, like, the Justin Gaethje stuff. I'll retire if I don't get the title shot, or if I lose, I might retire. And then you see some of these guys, like, I always remember Benson Henderson in this regard. And he's like, I'm going to retire at, like, 38, then I'm joining the military and, like, doing all this stuff. And then I think we still saw him fighting at, like, 41.
Yeah.
Something like that. So I don't really trust it. I imagine all the big money is still in front of him and the biggest fights and the legacy crowning fights. Because if he leaves after a couple, I feel like the conversations for him will be similar to Conor McGregor, especially if he loses. Like, he was so amazing, look how this run, but we just didn't get enough fights out of it to be like, you are a top three fighter ever or whatever, right? So we'll see. And I see a lot of people out there saying Makhachev versus Topuria will finally happen this year, but I feel like it's less likely than ever. What do you feel?
Yeah, I think it's less likely than ever, but it's still out there. And that's part of the reason why he's on my list.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, I think the fights we need to see, though, is Ilya unifying, and then can we get an Armin Sarukian fight, or are we not going to have that happen this year?
It's getting awkward.
It is. I know. And I know Dana White said, I believe, to Barstool this week that, you know, the headbutt he did to Dan Hooker at the weigh-in had some part of it. It's just all little things, I think, that are not helping his case. So hopefully things can be smooth and, you know, no issues outside the cage, and he can get back some trust, because that's the best fight that can be made at lightweight. Would you agree?
100%. That is the most stylistically, technically, all that. That's the most compelling matchup for Islam. Are there bigger fights? Sure. You know, bigger names. But in terms of, like, who can truly test and possibly get the better of Islam, he's the guy. Oh, excuse me. I'm sorry. Yes, Ilya. Thank you.
Just don't want you to fans to jump on you there. Okay.
Thank you. No. Thank you for protecting me.
Okay. You go to number two. We're getting to the nitty gritty here. Who did you have at two?
I had, this is kind of a weird take, but I have Khamzat Chimaev at number two. I think he's going to have another really big year where, because again, we don't know if he's going to stay at 185. We don't know if he's going to go up to 205. Who's going to be at 205 when he goes up? Will Pereira then be at heavyweight? All of those conversations are part of the reason why I put him there. But now that he's finally holding the belt, even though that last fight was, it started its own conversation for all the wrong reasons. I think it won't take much for him to bounce back from that with some sort of spectacular performance, regain all the aura and all of the headlines pretty quickly. So I think, I think Khamzat's going to have a big year.
I love that choice. He was, like, a debated one for me. I left him off my top five, though, just because I wasn't sure about the activity.
You were worried about the activity, weren't you?
Yeah, and just he doesn't do, like, crazy media. And when he does, he's not, you know, like, the most outgoing, personable person. He'll give you, like, a couple "I'll smash you, I'll kill you" type quotes, but it's not, like, anything crazy or in-depth, which adds to his aura. But, yeah, we just need him out there to do these fights. And I feel like it hasn't been a very strong start to the year. Like, we're probably not going to see him till at least May.
Yeah, that's fair. I miss the days of him perched on the side of the octagon with Darren Till. That was like that moment is seared into my memory as just particularly badass for some reason.
Yeah. Do you, it seems like Nasruddin Imavov will be the fight for Khamzat. Do you think there's a threat there? Like, what do you think? Imavov seems like he's at least doing all the right things to put himself in position to win.
Man, I tell you what, after that, I realize couldn't be a more different matchup stylistically, but what he did to Israel Adesanya was really pretty mind blowing. Nasruddin Imavov is an excellent grappler. I want to see the fight. I will say that. I want to see the fight. Do you think it would be that, or do you think it would be the winner of Hernandez and Strickland?
I guess depends on the timing, right? But
depends on the timing, like, depends on the performance too.
Like I would be, if I'm Nasruddin and February 21st rolls around and they still haven't like sent me a bout agreement or anything, I'd start to be getting a little bit scared depending on what those guys do, especially Strickland, because there's a lot of beef there, it seems, between those two. And if he goes out there and, like, as he said to me, he wanted to fight Hernandez because he considers them the American Chimaev with like similar traits to their game. If he goes out there and is able to shut all that stuff down, like we'll be looking at like, oh, can this guy actually do something against Hamza?
Yeah, no, that would be, that would be huge. And yeah, you can't discount how much the narrative and the storylines and the budding, not even budding, but when you look back at like all of the greatest fighters and the greatest memories and moments, most, if not all of them, had to, were in the context of a storied rivalry. Like, you, when you, when we, when you sit back and think about what makes, what makes fans, what compels fans to watch and continue to watch, it's storylines, it's performances, but it's also having that rival. And so while Sean, stylistically, you'd think that's a terrible matchup for Sean. Like you said, if he gets past Anthony Hernandez, there's no one better at creating a rivalry than Sean Strickland. That's a talent in and of itself, and that could get him there.
I wonder with Khamzat too, like he's, I saw an interview, he said, I just want to defend this belt once and then I want to go up and fight Alex Pereira or like whoever's the champ there. I wonder if any of that comes into play where it's like, you know, back end of the year, there's a little bit of holding out and a little bit of behind the scenes stuff where we maybe only get one fight for him. But I think perfect world, we see him defending the title like May and then I assume Abu Dhabi or something like that. But if we get two Khamzat title defenses this year, I think, you know, that puts him in tow with all the other champions and you can't really complain about the activity.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So at number two, I had Ilya Topuria, who we already discussed there. That was your number two Khamzat. So let's see, we might be aligned on number one here, Laura. I'd be surprised if you didn't have this guy in your top five. Who's your
number
one?
Can we count to three to say the name at the same time?
Okay, sure. One, two, three.
Islam Makhachev.
There we go. Yeah. It's a guy right here. Someone sent me this. They handmade this of Islam, which is pretty cool. Hand stitched it. Yeah, it was great. Yeah, so I mean, he's the one, he is the number one pound for pound fighter. He's sitting on the cusp of the longest winning streak in UFC history. He's tied with Anderson Silva right now at 16, could be a part as himself at 17, and is the champion of the deepest and best division in the sport right now. Are we agreeing on that?
Yeah, we do agree on that. And I think, again, he's the guy that everyone is chasing. He's the guy that everybody wants to be matched up with. He's the name that keeps being dropped in a lot of these super fight situations. He's the guy. He's the man. And to do that without necessarily being a big talker or brash or, you know, your love life's not part of the conversation. That speaks to the level of his performances and domination. And I will say this, he has become, I don't want to say, because it's not like he was ever a bad interview, but he has become a little bit more warm in interviews and he's one of my favorites to talk to. Yeah, he's starting to open up a little bit more. And maybe the dynamic's different, you know, male, female. But when we had him on, I stepped in for Dan Helly on that, the podcast about last fight. And it was when he won his last fight. And, you know, sometimes I'm not sure like how he's going to be, but he was great. He was so great. And, you know, you get a little bit more emotion out of him every single time. And it's just really, it's really cool to see. I'm happy for him. And I think he's an incredible champion and going to be there for a long time.
Yeah, and this break, I think, has given us some good insight into like kind of his outside the cage life. You see him, you know, doing card tricks with his friends, riding motorbikes, shooting, you know, plates with the gun and stuff. Yeah. So he's living his life out there. And yeah, I think this year just depends which direction we go, right? Because I think this weight class is so good. This kid, like, etch his legacy. I think we talk about, you know, Ilya having the number of fights, like he's right there. If he can defend that belt this year against, you know, Michael Morales and Shavkat, or something. Like, I think we're talking about him as maybe the greatest fighter ever. Like, he gets himself into that Jones, GSP, Mount Rushmore type of discussion. But if it goes the other way and we get two title defenses and they're Kamaru Usman and Ilya Topuria and not like the guys right there in the top three, then I think people are going to start taking shots at his resume, bringing up the Moicano stuff, things like that. So there's two different ways to go.
I did you expect me to have Shavkat on my list?
No, because I don't think you could, with given the circumstances, right? We don't know when he's going to be back. He's not much of a talker. Like, I would appreciate it, but I don't know if you'd be doing it just to lean into the gimmick, or if it would
be crossed my mind, but it would have been purely
so. But we need him back.
I do think we see him come back. I mean, he seems like he is preparing for an imminent return. Mm-hmm. Against who and when, I have no clue, but you know, I'll be excited for it.
Yeah, I wonder who it'll be. There's, so many good welterweights, but it seems like if they're going, you know, with Jack and Morales.
So where's it? I mean, you're the journalist. I just talk on TV. Is JDM Morales in like the one that they're truly? Because the Morales interview that I just watched was after New Year's, because he was talking about his dress up, and it was with Spanish ESPN, and he was saying that it was him and Islam.
Yeah, I think, smart to always put it out there, but I think like that's something that they're, I think they're talking about all these combinations. I think it'll depend on when Jack's ready, but Jack did a stream as well saying like he would be open to that fight, but he wanted Shavkat because he thinks Shavkat's the one that gets him the rematch with Islam. So, I mean, give me anyone in this top seven paired up and you can't do this wrong, but I guess it'll depends on who they go with for Islam, if it will be Kamaru Usman or not. And I don't know. I get the fight more and more as time goes on. It's just hard when there's all these other guys there, right? Like if there was no one there and it was good timing, go for it. But 100%. It's hard for me to be like, damn, look at all these guys who are so interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. Those are our top five. I like that we are in lockstep. Is there anything else you want to say on Islam?
No, I'm done.
Okay, who is I'll give you my on the bubble one first, since I've been making you go first. I was very close. Cale Harrison was close to getting bumped from five for Diego Lopez.
Oh, that's a good one.
He was someone that, you know, if he beats Volkanovski, I think he's going to be one of these like champions the UFC dreams of. He'll be ready to defend twice this year. I could see him having three title fights if he wins this fight. Some high profile names in that division, some interesting matchups, maybe revenge with Movsar. Like there's a lot of things in play. So yeah, Diego, I feel like he's got good potential here if he wins this fight. But
he falls into kind of a similar category for me, although even more so as a potential champion and obviously a multiple time challenger. Carlos Prates, like their activity level, their willingness, they're like anytime, any place. Anytime you have a guy that is just sort of willing to show up and throw down and has that sort of like fighter's fighter aura. I thought Carlos Prates didn't quite make the list, but he did cross my mind at one point.
He's a great choice. And I'd love to see a fight with him and Islam too, for kind of similar reasons, as you said earlier with the Morales thing. Like Islam is, he doesn't understand this guy. He's sitting at the press conference. He's like, how does he smoke cigarettes and then like, you know, eat all this bad food and then knock out a former champion? Like it doesn't register with him because he's all about dedication, hard work and discipline. And Carlos is.
Next time you interview Carlos, ask him about his sleep habits.
Okay.
We had a fighter meeting with him. What's that?
Any tidbits? What are you leading me into?
It's insane. We talked. Okay. So when he fought in Kansas City, you'll hear us reference it very briefly on the broadcast, but a lot of times we'll get like an insane story in fighter meetings and there's just not enough time in the walk or even like moments in the fight to truly squeeze in how crazy it is. He sleeps. I'm going to try to get this right. He sleeps like 6 hours maximum and he breaks it up into two separate chunks. So he'll like go to bed late and wake up at 2 a.m. and be awake for hours. And we're like, what do you do? He's like, I walk, I smoke, I walk around. And then he'll go back to bed for a couple of hours. So he's like, I'm gonna get these numbers wrong, but it was either 4 or 6 hours a night. And that's it.
That's great. That's
like, and not even all at once. He intentionally wakes up, just kind of does whatever, I play video games, I smoke, I walk. I was like, what are you talking about?
That's wild. That reminds me of that episode of Seinfeld where Kramer is like trying to just do like 10-minute naps throughout the day instead, and then he's just like completely zonked at the end. That's crazy. Yeah,
that's what, that's what it felt like. That's what it felt like. So yeah, ask him about that. You can get the facts straight. I'm sure I screwed that one up a little bit, but
I will for sure. No, yeah. he's a great choice. Just to go back to Diego quickly, like, were you cool with him getting this rematch? Like, there's some other guys out there, and what do you just make of it? Do you feel like he can? There's been enough time where he can make the adjustments to do something different with Volk here.
I was a little bit surprised by it. I think there are probably some other guys that I would have liked to have seen go first. But that being said, Diego Lopez is an electric fighter. And I think that he is the type of, we've seen him make massive adjustments before. I think he doesn't always get credit for his fight IQ because he's such an animal out there. But you know, this is a guy who lost on Contender Series. People don't even know he was on Contender Series and then made adjustments, came back, and then went on this unbelievable, you know, streak that he went on to get into the UFC and then through the UFC. So this is a guy who knows how to bounce back and make adjustments and be better for it. So I think I'm expecting a more competitive fight, to be sure. My understanding is he's made some changes with like his access to training and just how he's got things set up and more, you know, a la carte, more designed specifically for him, specifically for this fight. I think it'll be a good one.
Yeah, I think his biggest issue in the first fight is he wasn't doing a good job cutting off the cage, really. Mm-hmm. And I hate to sit here and criticize anyone's technique. These guys know millions more than I ever will when it comes to this, but it feels like that's something that could really help him. Did you kind of notice that in the first fight too, that he was chasing too much?
Yeah, I remember it's been since it happened that I haven't watched it, so I'm a little fuzzy on the details, but I do remember coming away with the impression of like, I was so happy for Volk and I thought Volk looked great, but there was also this part of my brain that was like, Diego looked off. Like he looked, not that I thought something was wrong with him, but it just was kind of one of those, like that wasn't his best performance. That wasn't the best that we know he's capable of for sure.
Yeah, the moment might have got to him, but he gets a rare second chance here. So not many people get this. Okay, other names I had just on the bubble. Hamzat Chimaev, who we discussed. John Jones, who we discussed. Piotr Jan, who can have a big year. Obviously, bantamweight is great. Max Holloway was one that I kind of mauled over in my head. He's so beloved. He's such a fan favorite. I think the UFC 300 knockout transformed his career forever. He'll always be like a guy that's known, but I just wonder what his path looks like. Like if he beats Charles Oliveira, what's the second half of the year for him? Can he slide himself into this conversation with Paddy and Armin and Ilya and Gaethje and stuff? So he's what I thought about. Did Max Holloway cross your mind at all?
He did. Yeah. For all of those same reasons, because he's such a big star and so beloved that it kind of doesn't, it almost doesn't matter at this point what his last few fights, I mean, his last few fights have been sensational, but the Gaethje fight in particular, obviously, but any time there's an opportunity for a big fight, he's a big name and the UFC is going to need big names. So once you kind of reach that particular status that he has reached, it's really hard to lose it. And he's at the point where I don't think that Max is going to be losing that status anytime soon, and they need big fights.
Agreed. And last name I had on my list, and almost 45 minutes in, his name has not come up, but we might seem dumb like looking back at this next year. Conor McGregor, of course, has to be mentioned, and all the reasons why we know, but like, you know, if he comes back and fights at the White House, wins, maybe he gets another fight, like we could be like, he should have been 2 or 1 or something on
He was the first one I thought of. He was the first one I thought of because, I mean, everywhere. I went to Lake Tahoe with my family, and Delta has, I guess, a partnership with Paramount Plus. So literally everywhere in Delta was Paramount Plus. And whose face was it? It was Conor McGregor. So he crossed my mind first as being number one. And then I was like, no, I get roasted.
No, I mean, it's a fine choice. And I know, you know, you have a business partnership with him, work internally and stuff. But yeah, like he's a guy, if this fight gets announced and confirmed, like that changes everything.
It does.
He puts himself right there. But I think any holdouts or reservations and just wondering, you know, is totally justified at this point. So let's get the fight done and then we can revise, but we're giving ourselves the out to maybe be like, Conor maybe should have been a 1A, but we just needed to wait and see what happened.
Exactly. I just didn't want to go with my skis, but yeah, I have another name. My
let's go.
My name, and this is a wild card, But he's been mentioned. I also watched the Dana White interview with Robbie Fox. Mm-hmm. Gable Steveson.
Yeah,
I could have a very big year in the UFC, which is wild to say about a guy who's not even signed yet. Yeah. Two fights, actually three, but technically two, or officially two. That's when you look at the heavyweight division and how desperately they need stars, and heavyweights are stars. And again, I keep going because this is the world I live in. New broadcast deal. The average fan wants to see big guys doing big things, big knockouts. And it's like you have, and I'm not the first to say this, but it feels a little bit, not quite as big, but it feels Brock-ish in terms of his ability to appeal to a general audience and to go out there and deliver in a division that really needs some stars and someone to compete with Tom Aspinall.
Yeah, please. I would, we need his evolution to happen perfectly. It's, you know, you just never know. We saw a bit of this with Bo Nickel, but he's obviously a different, you know, different beast altogether. So very curious to see how the Gable Steveson
starts. The weight class is everything to me. The weight class is, I'm sorry, but it's everything. Like if Gable Steveson was a lightweight or a welterweight, I would have a different, not a different opinion of him, but a different opinion of his timeline.
Yeah.
Than I do at heavyweight. So you still have to go out there and prove it. And that's still, it's not an easy thing to do, but I would like to see it.
Yeah. Especially in the face of all that hype, right? Like it's so hard. You can't just fly under the radar at all, especially when you have John Jones as your mentor at this point. So be very interesting. I think that could be a sneaky one. Okay, Laura, before I let you go, just had one other question written down here for you. Going into 2026, and we saw great weigh-in show moments in 2025. What do they say no to in the weigh-in show production meetings? And I'll give this to Ben Foulkes. He always asks this questions, but he's like, we see all this stuff. And like, what are the things that get left on the cutting room floor for that show? Because I can't.
What happens in the weigh-in show production meetings stay in the weigh-in show production meetings. I can only imagine. There may be some wild shit that gets thrown out there. I will say, in everyone's defense, including mine, maybe mostly mine. There have been a handful of times where not until the moment is happening and therefore too late because we're on live television, did any of us fully think about how something would actually play out. I'll just leave it at that. Like there's been a few times where I'm like, oh my God, I didn't think about that. Or I had no idea it would look like that. So.
Was there a favorite moment for you in that regard? There's so many. I can't imagine they mostly blend together, especially when you guys have had a couple drinks, but is there a 2025 weigh-in show moment that stands out?
That's the problem is everyone else has a drink. I have half a drink and I don't drink much. I say this all the time. It's really true. I don't drink much. So half a beer and we get up early for that show and I almost never have time to eat breakfast. So it's like 10 o'clock. Empty stomach, give Laura half a beer and wind her up and let her go. A favorite moment. It doesn't involve me. I just love watching DC do his thing. Yeah. He sings with all his heart.
So good.
And he claims he really was in the choir in church growing up. We all doubt that. We think it's a lie. But yeah, it's a lame answer, but just that show in general is a lot of fun, and I'm excited to continue it next year. So,
yeah, you guys do such an amazing job, and yeah, DC is hilarious. So he's all over the TV. I'm curious to see what the show looks like with him and John Jones, this Alpha Reality thing. It's
I know.
Very random, but this is MMA in 2026. Let's see. We're off to a hot start this year, Laura, and we'll see how the shakeout, if all these fighters we designated will truly define the year, or if any sneaky names will come up and surprise us. So really appreciate you doing this. It's always a blast, Laura, to have you this, and congrats on the nearly finalized contract. I can't wait for news on that, but obviously you deserve to be here and have shown great for yourself over these past years.
Thanks, Mike. I appreciate it. Thank you for having me at your bonfire.
Thank you. I'll take a quick break and be right back to wrap things up. And that does it for another edition of the Bonfire Podcast. Thanks so much to Laura for that. That was a lot of fun. We covered a lot of ground there. Many notable fighters, many things to look at and preview and forecast. That was a great joy. And I think the table is set for 2026. We got just a few more weeks, everyone, until the action resumes. And we'll try to get another show to you for UFC 324 Fight Week. See the timing on that. I will be headed out to London in a few days here for Abby's funeral and then going straight from there to Las Vegas for UFC 324. So a lot going on here in the next few days and weeks. We'll update you and share anything I can with you guys. Please, if you have not yet and have the means to donate to Abby's GoFundMe, it is still in the link. It means a lot. And yeah, we will continue to do everything we can for him. The support means a lot. The kind words, the comments, nothing's gone unnoticed. So, you know, things like this put a lot of things in perspective, and we just try to push forward and continue to do what we can. So that does it for now. Until next time, I will see you all back here by the bonfire.